94WHAS. I was watching the governor face Senator David Williams at the Farm Bureau forum yesterday. They managed to get him in the same room at the same time. More on that later. But right now, we've got Congressman Congressman Brett Guthrie.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Apparently, I've lost the ability to speak, but other than that, I'm good.
Oh, you've lost the abilities. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening in D.C. right now?
Well, right now everything is about the debt ceiling. Of course, the House has passed a plan to raise the debt ceiling. Now, the debt ceiling is taking care of past due bills, things that other Congresses, Republicans, did in the 2000s and the last majority did by factors of several in the last 2 years, and so it's time for us to get our fiscal house in order. What we did says we realize we have to pay our bills, but we can't continue to spend the way that we've spent money. And we're proposing, and we voted, we didn't vote the balanced budget amendment because that takes 290, but we put in our bill that the debt limit will go into effect when the balanced budget amendment passes the House and the Senate. Of course, it would have to go to the states. We understand that process. But the problem is what we really look for in the debt ceiling, and there's two possibilities. One is default. And if you go into default, then it'll raise interest rates, or the probability of default will raise interest rates, where will hurt small businesses, it will hurt people by paying their mortgage, it'll hurt people, you know, trying to get a car loan. But also, we now know if we do nothing, if we continue to spend the way that we spend, and the federal government continues to borrow the way that it borrows, because we can't continue to print money to service the debt, then interest rates will go up as well. We have to do both. We have to make sure we don't default, but we absolutely have to make sure we completely change the culture, and not at the edges. If we just mill around the edges on changing spending, the problem is going to continue. We really have to reform the way we spend in government. And we offered the plan. The president has not offered a plan. The Senate's never come close to passing a plan. And we passed a budget that deals with entitlements, saves Medicare for those who have it, reforms it for those in the future. We've now got a debt limit authorized out of the House with complete change of the way we do business in Washington, D.C. And the president gives good speeches, and we're trying to figure out what his details are. And we've asked the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office to look at what the president's proposing. And he said, I can't analyze a speech. I got to analyze a plan. And we're waiting for that plan.
May I ask you, I did not watch, sometimes I do watch C-SPAN because I have no life, but I did not watch the discussion of cut, cap, and balance in the House. But I'm curious, what arguments against cut, cap, and balance were offered on the floor of the House?
Because you hear people say that if you cut, then I think it's quite the opposite. I think we can't. Well, let me give what my argument. And I'll tell you what they're making against it. If spending money in Washington is going to make the economy grow, we should have a boom time right now. Mm-hmm. Over the last 2 years, with the stimulus bill and all the other spending that went forward. And so what their argument is, it's not a good time to cut because the economy is hurting. If you cut, it's going to make the economy worse. The other one is reforming entitlement programs. You know, the people on the other side don't want to reform entitlement programs, but they can't continue the way that they are. Medicare goes bankrupt in 2024.
Are they just in denial? Because, it is getting more and more difficult to find statistics anywhere that paint anything less than a doomsday scenario for Medicare and Social Security.
Particularly for Medicare, because the baby boomers are retiring and it's the rising cost of health care. When you look at, and I asked, they are in denial, because we had a committee hearing and I had Secretary Sebelius that I got to ask questions to. And my question is, the average person pays, people paying for Medicare, the average person pays in $115,000 over their lifetime. But we'll use over 300,000. And when the baby boomers retiring at 10,000 people a day, you can't cut your way to making this a prosperous a program that works. You can't cut doctors. You can't cut all the other things to make it work. You have to completely reform the program. Now, what we've offered is you don't reform the program for those who are on it and those who are approaching it. But I'm 47, so we pick 55, 10 years away we don't reform the program for you because that's what you've depended on. But people 54 and younger, people my age, are going to have a different Medicare program or no one will have it. We can't, or unless you think that we can continue to run deficits. As the president's budget, this is what they think, his budget actually doubles the national debt in 5 and triples it in 10 because he doesn't want to address entitlements. But
it doubles the national. Wait a minute. Wait.
Like Greece. You can put that forward and hopefully delay it to 2013 and get past the next election and deal with it when you have to deal with it. What we're saying in the House is, no, we need to deal with it now because this is the time we have to deal with it.
So I think I'm going to start asking all politicians, what percentage of GDP should the federal government spend every year? I think that's a valid question.
Right now we spend 24%.
But isn't that's artificially inflated because of the stimulus and the spending of the past 2 years?
But it is being spent. That's what's being spent. I think that's too high. It's historically, so this is since the modern times, we spent 20% of GDP in spending and brought in 18%. And so we've had a 2% of GDP deficit historically, which that's wrong. But now we're bringing in 15%. Our revenues are 15% of GDP because of the economy, and we're spending 24% of GDP. And that's where you're getting the $1.4 and $1.5 trillion budget deficits. And if you keep, the farther you kick the can down the road, the more expensive it is to fix. And we really believe, I was elected 2 years ago, but the people elected this time, we really believe we're here to address it. And most people get frustrated because Congress never addresses anything. Well, we want to address it, and that's why we're here. And of course, it gets frustrating because the national media can say, oh, you should just go along and get something out there just so we can move forward, because why take a tough stand? But we really believe this is our moment to change the course of the way we spend money in Washington, D.C. It's you're absolutely right. It's not sustainable.
Well, Congressman, when we I got to take a quick break, if you could hold on for me. I'd like to ask you to explain. This is the comment I get the most from those on the left who are advocating for higher taxes. If the Bush tax cuts were so necessary and awesome, why are we only bringing in 15% of GDP? Is that a normal number? Is it low? Is it high? Let's talk about that after the break.
Okay.
We're talking with Congressman Brett Guthrie. We'll be back after this on 84 WHAS. It's 86 degrees on the way to a billion degrees today. We're talking with Congressman Brett Guthrie. Congressman, are you under the dome of heat right now?
We are. Washington has got the same heat issues going on in Kentucky. Matter of fact, I think it breaks in Kentucky before it'll break here because everything moves west to east. So.
Well, it's also compounded by all the hot air flying around the Capitol.
That exists.
Oh, rim shot.
I knew that was coming. I was waiting for that comment.
It was too easy. It really was a softball. Let's get to my earlier question. What I hear from left-wingers is, if the Bush tax cuts are so awesome and if tax cuts bring in more revenue, why are we bringing in 15% of GDP, and where's the historical average on that?
Well, let me give the two comments on that. One is the president's budget that doubles the national debt and triples it in the next 10 years, triples it over 10 years, includes doing away with the Bush tax cuts. So the answer is you can't tax your way out of this. The problem is too big. There are too many. We've seen it coming. The baby boomers are retiring. If you're born in 1946, this year's your 65th birthday. Welcome to Medicare. I was born in 1964. I'm part of the baby boom. We've got to fix this problem. You cannot tax your way out of it. The House Republican budget, we've not done a good job saying this. We voted to eliminate corporate airplane loopholes. We voted to eliminate oil loopholes. What we voted for was a 25% top tax rate and getting rid of the loopholes. And what we said, and it's not specific because it's at a 25% top tax rate, and then go to let the Ways and Means Committee sit down and look at loopholes and tax credits and tax breaks so we can get our base of revenue up to 18% of the economy, because that's the historical average.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem has been the housing market. The housing market has been depleted, and so the question is, would raising taxes restore the economy? I would argue from 2001 to 2008, really, right before the spring of 2008, our economy held its own after 9/11, after Katrina and others, because we allow people to keep more money in their pockets. But two things is, you can't tax your way out of it. We've got to solve the entitlement problem. And the second thing is, you can't convince me that raising taxes on small businesses and sending it to Washington to spend is going to improve the economy. And going from 15% to 18% and even maybe into 20% of revenue, it's when you have a booming economy like we did in the end of the 1990s, when we had a Democrat president, a Republican Congress working together, but for deficit reduction, not working together to grow government.
And that's the issue. And to me, that's the sticking point, is like, how big should government be? I don't understand the argument that government at 25% is the way to go, because that's what we'd be looking at going forward with this Gang of Six plan. It assumes, from what I'm seeing, a permanent expanded
government.
It's a permanent
increase in government. And if the argument is 24% of government was going to create economic opportunity for people, we wouldn't have 9.2% unemployment. I mean, we're really, because we printed about $600 billion worth of money in the what they call QE2, which is running the printing press, to finance our government, and you're sitting that it brings inflation, and you see it in gas prices. Gas prices, you know, they got up close to four, they dropped a little bit to the mid threes. Now they're going back up again.
No, that's Bush's fault.
Well, that's the gas.
Gas prices are always George Bush's fault. As a matter of fact, when you're in your 90s and gas prices go up, it will still be George Bush's fault. Don't forget that.
The biggest issue for gas prices is printing money, devaluing the dollar. Imports become more expensive when the dollar falls. And our biggest import is oil. And so that's reflected directly at the price. You know, farmers are getting, of course, they're paying record inputs. It's not record profit. I'm not going to say that. But they're getting record prices now for corn, for wheat, and all the other basics. Guess what that's going to reflect in? Food prices. So we're really, and what I'm concerned about, and why I think we have to solve this problem, and we have to deal with the debt ceiling, but we have to change the way we spend money. Because my concern, we could be at a point of high unemployment, which we already have, high inflation, which we see coming, and then high interest rates if we don't solve this problem, which they're only artificially low because we're printing money. And we're getting people like China and India and Brazil to buy our debt, and Japan buys some of our foreign debt as well. But a lot of 40% is foreign owned. And once they say, hey, I'm going to have a higher interest rate to buy your debt because you're not getting your house in order, than the interest rates. So we could really be at high unemployment, high inflation, high interest rates. We haven't seen that since the late 1970s.
So it would be Carter Part 2.
Well, it's exactly where, and when you think that government's just going to solve the economy problem, if you just spend money, it's going to solve the problem. That's where it leads you.
Can I ask you a question about intergovernmental debt? Because I've been in a discussion with one of my favorite emailers.
Okay.
Who always sends me great economic information. In theory, intergovernmental debt is debt that one department owes another, and they are, in theory, getting interest on that money, correct?
In theory.
In theory. But if that, we all know that the agriculture department isn't going to go have a bake sale to pay off its debt to Social Security, or housing and urban development isn't going to have a car wash so they can pay off their debt to the Medicare trust fund.
Right.
So we all know this is just smoke and mirrors. Why not eliminate the intergovernmental debt and just say, okay, you know what? We forgive it all amongst ourselves. There's no harm, no foul. And just move forward from there as a means to mitigate at the damage on how high our national debt currently is.
Okay. The $14.3 trillion is public debt. That we're talking about is debt that you issue securities and people buy them and they have their securities in their locked boxes or whatever. That's the public debt. That's $14.3 trillion. The long-term liability over promises to Medicare and Medicaid is not necessarily debt, but liability. That's about $60 trillion. That's where we're approaching. So the intergovernmental debt would be money comes in from to the Social Security Trust Fund, and we take some of that money and we go give it to Health and Human Services to provide food stamps. Well, the problem is you can't forgive that debt, because if you spend it on food stamps, you're still going to have to owe somebody when they turn 65 the Social Security money that they paid in. So the debt, you can't just say, all right, there's no more debt between agencies, because you still owe, it's really being borrowed from money coming in from.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Regardless of how that is supposed to work, the reality of the situation is we know that the Department of Health and Human Services that just paid out that money for food stamps doesn't have a way to pay it back. We know that the Social Security dollars that are going out are coming essentially from general revenue.
Right. Social Security Trust Fund has been treated like it's general revenue.
Right. So it doesn't exist anymore. So let's end the charade and just force everyone to say, I mean, that otherwise the president could not have made the comment, I don't know if we'll have money for Social Security checks. Because if
fund of Social Security.
Exactly. So you see what I'm saying? It's like we're getting the money, different pockets, same pair of pants. And I'm not saying get rid of it so we can then rack that debt up again. But if we could do that to mitigate some of the damage on the bond market while dealing with spending in the long run, it just seems like that should be a tool that should be discussed. Of course, it would blow the hole in the whole theory of the Social Security lockbox out of the water. That would be a non-issue ever again.
Right.
But, you know, the truth of that would have to come out. But
the bottom line is we have to, and what's interesting in the way the media is playing what a lot of the things the House has done. I just want to reiterate, we've produced a plan. We've produced a budget. We think this is the direction we need to go. And people keep saying, well, why can't Washington solve problems? So the options that are really being played out in the talking heads and the people on television are solutions that fix it only on the edges. It doesn't make real change and real permanent change. Like, you know, saving money over 10 years, well, they may put, I haven't seen the details, nobody has, but let's say the president says, well, in 5 years, we're going to cut payments to doctors and Medicare by 20%, and so we say, oh, that'll save $1 trillion, and we vote for this. Well, we all know in 5 years, you can't cut payments for, and this is a real scenario.
Right.
I mean, this, because right now, doctors should be cut 21% if you follow a deficit reduction plan 10 years ago, that we can't cut them because they would quit seeing patients, and whether you had Medicare or not, you wouldn't be able to see a doctor.
And let's be real.
That's smoke and mirrors, yeah, and that's what the House is saying. We're not going to solve, we're not going to give more ability to borrow if we're not going to make real changes that are going to make sure our children have a better future.
Congressman Brett Guthrie, I appreciate your time. I had people on hold that wanted to ask you questions, but I ran out of time.
Well, next time, if you can get the questions and they can send them to me, I can get answers back to them, or next time have a list of them, we'll go through them when I get back.
Give that email out if you'd like.
Okay, you can send them to guthrie.house.gov. If you go to guthrie.house.gov, you can click onto the email.
Okay, or they can email them to me, and I'll make a list because we'll have you again in a couple weeks.
Just Google me and go on our official House webpage, and you can get those questions.
Congressman Brett Guthrie, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. We'll be right back after the Republic Bank and Trust Company Bloomberg update. This one, a service of UofL Healthcare. WHAS. We will have Congressman Yarmuth on what, Tuesday of next week? Friday. Thursday of next week. So I'll have the chance to ask him a bunch of questions. If you ever have a question, by the way, people email me questions for the Congress people that I speak with on a regular basis, but if they're really snotty questions, please don't expect me to ask a congressman a snotty question. Now, granted, I have on occasion asked a snotty question, but it was only after a series of very nice questions with snotty answers. So, you know, I don't like to just say something completely snotty right out of the chute, but you can always email those questions for the congressman. We now have a pretty good rotation. We speak with Congressman Brett Guthrie. We speak with Congressman Todd Young. We speak with Congressman Jeff Davis. We speak with Congressman John Yarmuth. I think we're doing pretty good with the congressman and stuff. 571-8484, 1-800-444-8484. We got the last of this half hour to discuss the debt ceiling. Then I got a few other things I want to touch on. David, you're on 84WHAS.
Hey, Mandy, how are you doing?
I'm good, buddy.
Just wanted to say, I don't know if you've seen or watched the moves that are going on by other economies around the world. Switzerland is pushing through legislation right now to basically return to a gold standard.
I saw that, but I didn't realize with Switzerland, for some reason, I thought that they were still attached. I didn't know that they had fiat currency. I didn't know that.
I think, what is it, England, Switzerland, and I don't know if the Deutsche Mark still exists or not. There's three or four nations that participate in the euro where businesses will accept the euro, but they also accept their own currency and still maintain their own exchange rate. I mean, if you watch India, if you watch China, and look at the gold reserves, because right now, I mean, you don't have a de facto currency that if somebody wanted to move out of the dollar as the world's reserve currency,
right,
they don't really have a place to go because, I mean, China really doesn't, their currency isn't tied to anything,
well,
and then they just sort of make their own exchange rate as they go.
And they artificially manipulate their currency.
But one thing I think you should ask these Congress people, and I think, you know, Americans should ask themselves, I mean, it's like the Field of Dreams question. Just because they raise it doesn't mean people will buy it. You know, if you build it, they will come. That's not true because, you know, in the last one, QE2, they'll have to have a QE3 because I don't think they're going to be able to sell this debt to the world. I definitely don't think they can sell it. I mean, you've already had major bond funds that basically divest themselves of the United States. People are trying to get out of the U.S. dollar because they look at this country and they see what's happening. And if they lose, you know, the world reserve currency, I've seen articles and arguments from the, you know, people I have and friends I have on the left, like, well, you know, all of our debt is in U.S. dollars. You know, Greece is in the problem they're in because their debt is in, you know, they don't have the ability to print money. And I'm just like, yeah, but folks, our dollar is backed by just simply the fact that I believe it's worth something because you're willing to take it and give me something in return. I mean, it's not backed by anything.
What about the theory? I heard a lot of talk about it about 2 years ago, and then it kind of stopped. Is that the Federal Reserve is purposely hyperinflating the dollar to pay back debt with inflated dollars so it doesn't actually cost as much?
Well, that's throughout our economic history. I encourage people to go on to, you turn me on to it, Freedom of Economic Education, Larry Reed.
The Foundation for Economic Education. I made a note to myself on my page today, get Larry Reed. So hopefully I'll have him on next week.
He posted something via Facebook, and basically there was a political party in the 19th century that basically called themselves inflationist. They were a political party that was dedicated to inflating the value of money in order to be able to pay off their debt. And I think it's what the Federal Reserve is trying to do now by inflating the value of the dollar, because then, debt is just not worth as much. I mean, I read an article that really got me interested, basically saying that the United States government has been in complete and utter default since 1971 once they removed themselves from the gold standard. Because now if you have bags of dollars, on the private market, you can buy gold, but you cannot go back to the individual or the entity that printed it and get anything for it. I mean, I can't go to the Federal Reserve and say, here you go, here's $1 million. $1 million, now what do I get? You don't get anything. And they go, no, just take your pieces of paper back. It used to be you could exchange it for silver or gold our founders set this country up to be a bimetallic gold, standard for money.
I read a really interesting article. I should find it online. I think I read it in City Journal from the Manhattan Institute about why we even, their whole argument was, why don't we make measurements like weights floating? Like, you go to the deli and you buy a pound of hamburger. Well, is that pound always going to be the pound? Yes, because weights are a standard. We have a standard for what a pound actually is. But in reality, we have a floating currency, so why not have a floating pound? Some days that pound may be a buck and a quarter, depending on what demand is. Some days it'll be 3/4 of a pound. It's the same theory, and when it was explained like that, I need to find the article because I'm doing a bad job. But it did make me question this sort of random assertion of value to our dollar that we have now compared to attaching it to something that has concrete value.
Well, government doesn't like having it connected to concrete value because then all of a sudden it constrains and it limits their ability to do what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Without having the power of the printing press, which has been government's dream ever since the progressive movement started, was basically, if I can untether the U.S. currency from any hard asset, so that I, as a government, they run no risk of all of us citizens, bagging up our money, showing up at the Federal Reserve and demanding gold and putting the government in a very, precarious situation of insolvency. Right now, they hold all the power because if we lose faith in the dollar, we're just basically holding pieces of papers with pretty artwork on it.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, man. Enjoyable and informative as always.
All right.
Talk to you soon. We'll get Steve before the break. Steve, you're on 84 WHAS.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
Well, that gentleman just is, he's got to be reading fine. My call was about the Federal Reserve.
Hey, Steve, are you on a speakerphone?
Yes.
Yeah, pick that up for me.
Okay, hang on.
Speakerphone sounds terrible on the radio, so we will just wait until he would. There you go.
Well,
there, exactly. Okay, Steve, go ahead and make your point.
Okay. The Federal Reserve was created in 1918.
Hello. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Okay. Federal Reserve was created in 1913, and it's been a disaster ever since. That gentleman hit the nail right on the head. I'll add to it. As long as you give a politician a blank checkbook or a credit card, guess what's going to happen?
They're going to spend the money.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened since 1913. We can talk all day long about deficit reduction and everything else, but it's not going to do a bit of good until you get your monetary situation straightened out.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think is missing in this whole conversation about the debt ceiling is, if the debt ceiling is raised, we're simply giving a stamp of approval for more spending. That's what this is. I mean, that's what this is a conversation about. This debt ceiling may be about raising the debt for spending that's already occurred, but unless we talk about significant controls and shrinking the size of government, this is an argument we're going to have over and over again.
Oh, yeah. It's never going to end.
Right.
You're going to have to fix your money. You know, if it wasn't for the Federal Reserve, we probably wouldn't have been in Vietnam. We wouldn't have been in Korea. President Obama wouldn't be standing up there saying, well, I'm going to give $100 million to this country or 150. Where's he going to get that money? They're going to print it.
Oh, I hear you.
You know, inflation is the cruelest form of taxation.
It's the hidden form of taxation. I hear you, Steve. I hear you. Let's take a quick time out. We'll be back with a few more of your phone calls. And last night's gubernatorial forum, David Williams and Governor Steve Beshear mixed it up hard. We'll be back after this on 84 WHAS. It's 86 degrees on 84 WHAS. We may have to play that. How did we miss that story, Brian? How did we miss that story?
It just aired on Tuesday. So now that I knew about that story. Now this was several years ago that aired. So you were in town.
Okay, so that story was a long
recent.
Time ago.
The story that she did is not recent.
Okay,
but Tosh just aired it this week.
Renee Murphy,
yes.
The most admired woman in the media in Louisville, was just
still bitter about that.
Yeah, no, I'm not bitter. I'm giving her props. I'm giving her her props. I'm not bitter about that at all. As long as I lose to someone good, I'm okay with that. It's when I lose to someone that's not as good as I am.
Terry Miners. I didn't say that.
Yeah. Did you say that on the air?
I think I did. I'm kidding.
I don't think he's ever going to be the most admired woman.
Ah, that's true.
I would not want to compete in a category against Cindy Sullivan or Terry Miners for anything. Anything. Because everyone in this town loves them. I mean, loves them. You would never win against those two.
No, Cindy Sullivan might be the only person in town with 100% approval.
Exactly. And you know what? She totally deserves it. She's super nice. I mean, there's, you know, what you hear from Cindy on the air is exactly how she is off the air. There's just, you know. But now, Renee Murphy, if for those of you who don't know what Tosh.0 is, it is it's the video version of this program. It's Tosh. What's Tosh's first name? Daniel?
Daniel Tosh.
Yeah. I thought that, but for some reason I was thinking he was the reggae guy. But in any case, Daniel Tosh stands up and plays video clips and makes fun of them. And he played one. Apparently this was a couple of years ago.
Yes.
What happened with that teacher?
I don't know, but I don't think it turned out well for him. It can't.
Well, and they played the clip. Apparently a late middle-aged white guy teacher.
Yeah, probably 50-year-old white teacher.
Yeah. And apparently a student, he told a student to do something, and the student used the N-word, but used it in the rap vernacular with the A at the end.
Yeah.
And the teacher basically used it back at him. And then it was like, oh, that's racist. Okay, wait a minute. It's not racist when the student says it at a teacher. But it is racist when the teacher turns around in exactly the same context and uses it as a student. But Tosh uses that as an example of when to play, is it racist or not?
He essentially uses all racial slangs and bad stereotypes over the course of history and then adds an A on it and claims that it's okay.
Nice.
We can't repeat any of them
on the air.
But
well, we could, but we'd get in a big, fat, hairy load of trouble, and it's not worth it.
Right. Yeah. We should call Renee and see how what ended up happening to that
what
teacher.
We should, actually. See if we can track down what happened to the teacher, because I just think, no, was it the best thing he ever did? No. But is it the worst thing that's ever happened? I say no.
Well, what's bad is when the reporter shows up and then he defends his action. This is one of those instances where even if he didn't believe it, he needed to back off and just say, that was a mistake on my part, move on.
But see, here's the thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. When you try and explain something like that, Brian, trust me, it doesn't matter. It does not matter what you say. It doesn't matter if you apologize and then try and move past it because, oh, hell no. People will not let you do that. Trust me on this. You of all people know. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you apologize and never even remotely do anything like that again. It doesn't matter. But I am curious, because I got to tell you, in that context, no, granted, it was a dumb thing to do. But, you know, but it made Tosh.0 on Comedy Central. So, you know, our little burb gets a little something-something on Tosh, which, you know, take that as is. Sometimes I watch that show. What I did not watch, because I don't know if it was on TV, in the first appearance of the 2011 gubernatorial election, Democratic Governor Steve Beshear and Republican State President David Williams went at it at a Kentucky Farm Bureau forum on Wednesday. They covered a lot of topics. They covered, obviously, agriculture was kind of a big deal. Tax and education policy and some other stuff. For most of the forum, the governor stuck with his talking points about his leadership and record of balancing several state budgets through the recession. Williams, of course, went on the attack against Beshear, saying the governor has not led on important issues and the Commonwealth has fallen behind such states as Tennessee, which doesn't have a state income tax. And he's right. He's right. Despite continuing high employment, Beshear said his challenger was wrong about the state's competitiveness, and he criticized Senator Williams for being more interested in talking about Tennessee than supporting real change in the state legislature. I mean, it just sounded like I'd love Brian, reach out. You see if we can get them both on the show. I'll give them an entire show. Book it out as far as we need to, obviously before the election. But make the offer right now. Let's choose 10 dates, 10 days in October, and send the invite out. Both of them here, right here, 3 hours, right here. And we'll take questions from callers, and we will allow them to discuss it in a platform, in a venue that a gazillion people will hear. Because we just had a ratings book, and our numbers are actually a gazillion. Gazillion. That's right.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you for that, Brian. Sure. I give Brian all the credit for that.
I've really brought in the lady listeners.
Yeah, the chicks love Brian.
Especially after that beatdown I took from that woman.
Yeah, yeah, and you did it with such style and panache.
Class.
Yeah, that it's going to be interesting to watch this gubernatorial race with David Williams and Governor Beshear, because Governor Beshear is inherently likable, but I do question his ability to lead in an effective fashion. And David Williams is kind of inherently unlikable. But in a lot of ways, I trust his ability to lead more than the governor's. So it's, you know, are you going to eat your peas? Or are you going to skip right to the pudding? That's what this election's all about. And yes, I'm saying David Williams is eating your peas. A lot of people just don't like the guy. I mean, a lot of people, I get emails, they're like, God, I don't like Governor Steve Beshear, but I really don't like David Williams. He's abrasive. But, you know, I don't want a nursery school teacher that everyone loves as my governor. I want somebody who's going to get things done. Get things done. Hey, Brian, look behind you. I recorded a little message for Becca at WBKI because she's leaving Louisville Live and going to be a flight attendant. I recorded her a little message as a former flight attendant, giving her a little advice, and it just came on. It's distracting to see yourself on TV as you're trying to talk about something important. Let's do this, Brian. And Brian's now holding his hands up. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we get back, there's maybe four or five other stories that I have not gotten to this week that I would like to talk about, ranging from, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. And then my computer just froze up. We'll be back after the news, traffic, and weather on 84 WHAS.